Morning, Mr. Push. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, very well. It's an interesting period of time in the run-up to our Europe Day. And I'm very pleased that for the first time we will have Europe Day events across Australia.
You wanted to talk in particular of the renewables policy that was recently released in Brussels?
Yes, we will have as part of our Europe Day outreach, we will have a panel event in Melbourne on Monday, which will look at the European Green Deal and the pandemic recovery.
Well, maybe for our listeners who are not aware, can you elaborate on what are the main goals and measures?
With the new commission taking office 2 years ago, we also got established a number of new key priorities for the coming years. One of those priorities is a new Green Deal, which means that we have to tackle climate change and environmental degradation in a whole of government approach. We also looked at digitalization as a main objective for Europe, and of course, to make Europe a safe and secure place for its citizens. The European Green Deal now responds to the global challenges of climate change. And what we've decided is that we will mainstream climate change in all our policies and programs. When we set up our seven-year budget, which was adopted last year, with 1.1 trillion euros and a recovery package, the Next Generation EU package to help areas in Europe that are particularly affected by the pandemic and the economic losses of the pandemic, of 750 billion euros, we decided that one third of all that budget will be dedicated to projects that will benefit climate and environmental objectives. And what we also did is we upgraded our ambition for our goals to make Europe the first net zero continent by 2050.
Very ambitious indeed. I believe that one of the commitments made was to raise the goal to reduce carbon emissions by 2030. And also there's a focus on developing green fuels. Mm-hmm. What are they? Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. When we decided to enshrine our 2050 net zero emission target into law, we also had to look at how can we achieve that. And we therefore raised our ambition to cut down our greenhouse gas emissions by 55% by 2030, instead of 40% as we had foreseen earlier. So we have a more ambitious goal to already achieve that during this decade. And when it comes to our fuel strategy, we need to revolutionize transport and the use of energy. And we will see that in the future, renewable energy will play a more important role in our energy mix. We will change our entire mobility system to decarbonize as much as possible. Our ambition is to have 90% of our current greenhouse gas emissions in transport reduced. 90% by 2050. That is the only possibility in order to achieve net zero emission status. And therefore, we will work also with Australia on issues such as green hydrogen. I believe Australia can benefit from Europe's activities to decarbonize its manufacturing. And many European companies and industries are already looking to Australia as a source for green hydrogen.
On the relationship between Australia and the European Union, one of the friction points in regards with the discussions about the free trade agreement is the very poor quality of fuel used in Australia for cars, which is a big impairment for the export of European cars to Australia. Has this advanced?
It's a long-standing request that we do have vis-a-vis the Australian government, and not only for the sake of our industry. I think it is important to know that with the current fuel standards here in Australia, Australian consumers will not be able to purchase and drive the latest generation of fuel-efficient cars produced in Europe, which is also the latest generation of safest cars. So the fuel standard basically prevents these cars to run, and therefore Australians cannot benefit from developments, technological developments in the automotive industry. We have raised this topic here, and we hope that we'll find a solution going forward which allows the latest technology available in the world to also be available here in Australia.
All right. One more topic I wanted to talk about. One of the ways to get the European Union to become carbon neutral is the electrification of cars. The take-up with consumers is really increasing. But the batteries of these vehicles are made of rare metals and other minerals that are produced in very small quantities and almost exclusively by China right now. But Australia has plenty of reserves of lots of these metal, like lithium, for example. Are there discussions in that direction to create partnerships between European manufacturers and Australia as a provider of this raw material?
I think we are in Europe, and our industry, as well as the governments, are well aware that we can only create new technologies and move forward in our drive to create electric vehicles in mass production if we have access to rare earth and critical minerals. And we have to diversify our supplies here. For some of those, indeed, over 90% will be sourced in China at this point in time. And we've therefore are looking into ways of expanding and diversifying our resource opportunities. There is a European Rare Earth Rare Metals Alliance that offers a dialogue and a possibility, a platform to discuss this. And we've invited Australian counterparts to be part of that. And I can tell you that already 12 Australian companies, Austrade and one university have joined. So we are starting to have that and intensifying, in fact, that dialogue with countries such as Australia, Canada, the US and Japan. And we think Australia would be a good partner in that endeavor.
All right. On a more general approach to tackling the climate change problem, Scott Morrison says that his meeting and building his climate commitments taken at COP21 in 2015. But COP21, most countries are also committed to raise the bar every 5 years. It's been done by the EU, by Canada, by Japan, not by Australia. What's your take on that, and do you think the Australian government is not doing enough?
We believe that all partners in the Paris Agreement will have to step up at the COP26 in Glasgow, become more ambitious in their own objectives. And many have done so already. We are encouraging those who are still in that process. But we do have a good dialogue with Australia and cooperation with Australia on all issues on climate change and environment. We are working together with Australian counterparts on quite a number of these initiatives to see how we can advance a goal that both our countries and our partners would want to achieve.
One last question. What do you expect from this panel discussion in Melbourne?
What we expect from these discussions, and we will hold more of them in Australia, is that we raise awareness of the importance of this topic for everyone. This is a global challenge, and we have to respond it at a global level. And I'm very pleased that we have now an opportunity to talk about this on this occasion at a conference organized by RMIT in Melbourne on the 10th of May. But we will have that opportunity also in other places. We'll hold a dialogue on climate change challenges and pandemic recovery in Sydney on the 18th of May. As most of these conferences will also be shared online. So for those who have an interest in this topic, they could follow the debate. It's an important discussion, and I'm very pleased that we have an audience for this year.
All right. Well, our interested listeners will click on the link to follow the debate. Monsieur l'ambassadeur de l'Union européenne en Australie, Michael Pulch, merci beaucoup.
Bon, c'était un plaisir de parler avec vous. Je suis désolé que nous avons mené la conversation en anglais au lieu de français, mais il me faut dire, le vocabulaire est tellement spécifique pour une discussion en changement climatique que j'ai préféré de parler en anglais en ce cas.
Pas de problème. On vous excuse pour cette fois. Merci beaucoup.
Merci bien pour votre entrée.